Welcome to Storage Mania Podcast. In today's edition, we feature a story by Kaplaz entitled The Psychic Detective. I'm not psychic. I've never have been able to tell the future, not now and certainly not ever. If I had been, I wouldn't still be living in the cupboard I call an apartment or driving the wreck on wheels, which I call my car. Probably have been a billionaire by now, having successfully seen the lottery results at least 9 times. I'm not psychic. But there are those who believe I am, and because of this misconception, a 10-year-old girl could be dead within 24 hours. When I set up business as a private eye, or an inquiry agent, as we're more commonly known these days, I had anticipated hours of surveillance work, mostly watching unfaithful husbands and, in some rare cases, wives. I had expected to be dealing with infidelity and missing animals, cheating husbands, missing cats, definitely not hunting a monster. A vicious kidnapper who I knew for certain had killed once before, and I had no doubt would definitely kill again. This was the kind of thing the police were paid money to do. This wasn't what I had signed up for. But the monster had other ideas. He had called for me himself. I hadn't always worked for myself. An old friend of my father's had given me a summer job after my A-level exams, just something to do until I went to university. He hadn't told me what he did for a living, and when I stepped into this world for the first time, I felt more comfortable than I should have been. He hadn't expected me to get the hang of it as quickly as I'd done. He'd called me a natural. Can't explain how I could be so good at something I'd only just started doing, but I'd done it my whole life without consciously realizing it. It started with little games I used to play to amuse myself whilst waiting for my dad to be late picking me up from school. Memorizing the number plates of cars that passed by, watching people notice little things that others would miss. Like how I knew the man next door was cheating on his wife because his shirt was always miraculously clean after work. He worked at a printing press and he didn't necessarily need to get dirty, but I knew the nature of the man. I'd watched him cleaning his backyard and I knew he wasn't his tidy person. Ink spills, and yet he never got a drop on himself despite clumsiness I knew he had. Someone washed his shirts every night before he got home to mask other marks that may have been left behind. He was shocked when I told him that if he didn't stop seeing her, I'd tell his wife. He just looked at me in amazement, no questions asked, but after that, he never came home in a clean shirt, and he never found out how I'd known. What was meant to be a holiday job became much more after the man had realized my potential. He talked my dad into letting me work with him for one more year, and I never went to university in the end. I stayed with him for 5 years, in which he taught me tricks of the trade. He had been a policeman before opening his detective agency, and he taught me everything he knew. We parted ways after all the other associates we worked with started moaning about losing money. The clients paid us on commission, and as my reputation for knowing things grew, so did my list of clients. I couldn't stay there much longer as the hostility against me grew. The pupil had outgrown the master. I left with a tidy sum in my pocket, a firm list of clients, and the knowledge I had acquired. I rented a room above an office in Earl's Court. Business was slow at first, but picked up gradually. The rumors about me being psychic didn't really kick off until after the Gregory case. If I had known what kind of trouble it would lend me in, I would have turned John Gregory out of my door the minute he walked in. John Gregory was instantly recognizable to me the minute he walked in. I was surprised at the lack of paparazzi as he closed the door behind him. He had clearly taken precautions on his way to see me. His suit was Italian-made, finely tailored, and he was wearing it for the first time. His dark blonde hair was tied back in a ponytail, and his usually pale skin was well tanned. He had strong cheekbones, a square jaw, and the kind of looks that had made him an Oscar winner before he was 30. He looked around my office slowly, taking in the shabby secondhand furniture and that ancient Dell computer on my desk. Was having second thoughts about my capability to help him. He sighed softly before sitting down in the wobbly green chair in front of him. Whatever it was I decided, it was serious. A friend of mine recommended you, but I'm not sure you can help me, he began. Which friend? John Williams. You helped him with his wife? I nodded my assent. I remembered 62-year-old John Williams, his gorgeous young wife, and the postman she'd been shagging. What can I do for you then, Mr. Gregory? I asked warmly. The manner had to be reassuring but calm. I had learnt well. So you know who I am, he smiled. My problem is delicate. John assured me you could help me. He thinks very highly of you, but to be honest, Mr. Gray, I was expecting someone older. Since I'm already here, I might as well tell you, he continued. At 23, I was hardly anyone's idea of a private eye, and I often got underestimated, which I found usually worked in my favor. John Gregory cleared his throat, coughed a little, and then began to speak in his deep baritone voice. I've been to the police and two detectives already, and I'm not expecting you to work miracles, Mr. Gray. James, I interrupted. Not expecting you to work miracles, James, but you come highly recommended. You may have read in the paper that my painting was stolen. It was a rare Da Vinci and was worth almost 20 million pounds. What the papers didn't say is that the insurance company wouldn't pay for it or that I have serious gambling debts. I was going to sell the painting 3 days before it disappeared. The police have spoken to all their contacts in the underground, but to no avail. I'm in dire straits, James. I hated myself for the question I had to ask him, but my mentor had taught me that looking after number one was the first objective. Sorry for asking this, but can you afford my fee? It'll cost you 200 pounds per day, plus any expenses I may incur. He frowned. How long will it take you? I had read the case in the paper and come with a solution almost instantly. I had debated on calling the police, but as I learned earlier, they didn't take too kindly to help from amateurs. If you give me 3,000 pounds right now, you'll have your painting in an hour. John Gregory gasped, then laughed mirthlessly and looked murderously angry. Is this some sort of joke, Mr. Gray? I assure you I'm deadly serious. Come back in an hour and I'll tell you where to find your painting. He looked at me suspiciously before walking out and slamming the door in his wake. I picked up the phone on the table and made a few calls, one of them to Lace, a contact of mine. Lace is a fence and a frightfully good one. I met her when I was younger. We'd grown up in the same neighborhood. If any stolen item had been sold anywhere in Europe, especially something as big as a Da Vinci, Lace would know about it. I was satisfied with the information she gave me. I called a friend in the police force, and she more or less confirmed my suspicions. In 30 minutes, I knew for sure what had happened to John Gregory's painting. John Gregory walked in exactly an hour later. He still had a dour expression on his face. So where's my painting, Mr. Gray? Painting is safe, Mr. Gregory. I first saw your case in the paper about a month ago, and I was intrigued. They showed a picture of your house, and I couldn't help but notice that you had decorators there. You were redoing the whole place. I suspect the reason the insurance company didn't pay up is because they were not satisfied with your security arrangements. Am I wrong, Mr. Gregory? He nodded his head. The alarm system was down due to the bloody decorators. My wife insisted on all the changes. She doesn't know about the gambling, and I'd rather she didn't find out. I nodded in return before continuing my narrative. The thief knew just when to strike. The alarms in the house were down, but the security outside was still intact. It was someone who was already in the house, I said. The police thought so, too. They searched all the decorators and my assistants who live with us, but everything came out clean. It simply vanished, he interjected. How long have you had your assistant, Mr. Gregory? Almost 2 years. Jones is a good man. He has no police record. I don't doubt that for a second. Did your assistant decorate his own room? John Gregory was stunned. How did you know? He insisted. He said he used to be a decorator when he was younger. When did you acquire the painting room, Mr. Gregory? Almost 2 years ago, I think, said after pondering it for a moment. Around the same time Mr. Jones appeared. He gasped. He hadn't realized the connection, although I was sure the police had. The police took him in for questioning. They even checked his fingerprints. They were very interested in him, but he came out clean, like I told you, Mr. Gray. You're barking up the wrong tree and asking such ridiculous things. I knew you were too young. Thanks for your time. I'm sure you don't expect me to pay you 300 pounds for this. He stood up to leave. Wait, Mr. Gregory. Give me 5 more minutes and it'll be all clear. He sat down reluctantly, his face contorted with rage. The reason the police took such an interest in your assistant is because he's the spitting image of Howard Lakes, a notorious art thief. I saw the resemblance as well and was intrigued. Mr. Jones is not a thief, but he is an accomplice. I expect that Howard Lakes is his twin brother. This is a nice little arrangement for them. Lakes' fingerprints are on the police database, but Jones' fingerprints are not. Identical twins don't have identical fingerprints. They switched positions earlier in the day so that they could do the theft. Lake stole the painting and hid it in Jones's room. Then they switched again, and he left the house. He couldn't risk leaving the house with it. Jones took his place, and when the police who suspected that Jones was Lake's in disguise took his prints, they were disappointed. Jones wasn't Lake's. You can't change your fingerprints, so Jones couldn't possibly have been Lake's. But what if they were brothers? I suspect that they played this trick before. Get a policeman at once to arrest Jones, but tell them to follow him first. He will probably lead them to Lake's. If all this is true, James, where's my painting? He asked, skeptical. Your painting never left the house. I called a friend of mine to make sure it hadn't been sold, and she told me it hadn't. Your painting is in your assistant's room, under the wallpaper. That's why he insisted on decorating his own room. He's been biding his time for 2 years, waiting for an ideal situation. The painting was going to stay under the wallpaper until the heat died down, and then they'd sell it. Go and remove the wallpaper, and you'll find your painting there. John Gregory still looked defiant. He kept his mouth shut and then stood up. He told me he'd do as I said, and if I was right, he would return and pay me. He left the room again, silently this time. I had forgot about John Gregory until the next morning when I saw the morning paper. The front headline read, Psychic Private Eye Nabs Gregory Art Thief. When I arrived at my office, several camera flashes and reporters greeted me. John Gregory stood amongst them, smiling at me with a smile People magazine had described as the most perfect smile in the world. Thanks, James. Everything was exactly as you'd said. Lakes and Jones had done this thing several times before. I don't know how you knew, but thanks. You must be psychic or something. There's no way you could have figured it all out, and you never even left your chair. I'm not psychic, I protested, but he merely smiled at me. And this is yours, he said, handing me a check. I looked at the figure, and instead of £300 he owed me, it was a check for £30,000. I blinked at the amount, and John Gregory laughed. You deserve it. You saved me a lot more than you realize. Get a better office and better furniture. You deserve better than this old place. That John Gregory and his press left. I gained a reputation. Couldn't possibly live up to the attentions of the criminal keen to prove to the world what I already knew, that I was no psychic. Only I couldn't fail. A girl's life depended on an ability I didn't have. What I had was very acute perception and good powers of deduction. Anyone could do what I did if they tried hard enough. Why, I thought, did I have to help that bloody John Gregory? After Gregory, I had helped with a few other high-profile cases, and my psychic reputation had grown. The girl was snatched on a Sunday evening, and the letter arrived to me by post on Monday. She was a billionaire's daughter. She had been snatched on Sunday Mass while her mother was in the confession booth. The irony of it all the letter said was, "You have until noon Sunday, or the girl dies, Mr. Psychic." I had no clue. The press had somehow found out, and the police were now involved. I'd met the girl's tearful parents, and they believed sincerely that if their daughter could be found, I was the only one to do it. What exactly had I gotten myself into? This has been The Psychic Detective by Kaplas.